Okay, With Chat here on Radio Wivenhoe, and it's the weekly show on Radio Wivenhoe where it's all conversation based. So as the name suggests, With Chat, I source around, I hunt around the town and I find somebody, I find a very willing volunteer who will kindly come around and have a chat and explain a bit more all about their background in Wivenhoe, and we can explore some issues about the town itself and just see where the conversation takes us and drink some wine. That's very important. Now I've been ribbed slightly. I've been mocked that my first question so far has always been the same. And so, ye doubters, I'm going to try something a bit different. I'm going to ask my guest to maybe introduce themselves and to tell me what they think for them personally Wivenhoe represents. So, my guest, please, kind sir, your name.
Hello, Jason. My name is Peter Hill. I've been here in Wivenhoe since 1972. I kind of arrived here with my wife almost by accident. My mother suggested that she wanted to put a casserole in the oven for us when we got engaged, and that's to my person I've been married to now for nearly 40 years, my wife Bonnie, who's also well known in Wivenhoe. But we looked at each other at that time and suggested about an hour away from mother's home in Southend. So we, by accident, we discovered Wivenhoe and bought a place here at 1972 in the Avalia Estate. It's a very nice little three-bed semi. We both used to work up in London, so we used to travel on the train together and come back of an evening. But it actually took us 2 years before we realised that there was a school here in Wivenhoe. I took a day off, and I remember driving up the avenue and discovering these school children going down Heath Road, and that took me to explore what was at the end of Heath Road and found Broomgrove School. That was a bit of a surprise for us. So, around our early days, we did not know Wivenhoe at all. Our social lives were still in Southend. But things gradually changed after that.
And was it really a case of just stumbling across Wivenhoe, or did you do any research or speak with people? Were you maybe just driving around and you stumbled across this fairly pleasant place to live?
The accident was through a friend who knew a builder in Southend who was building the estate here in Wivenhoe. And the builder suggested we go and look at a house here at Wivenhoe, so we didn't do any research. We liked the house. The price was something we could afford. And actually what clinched the deal was actually pancakes and maple syrup at the George Hotel in Colchester High Street. So we liked Colchester. That seemed to be much more of a pleasant high street than Southend. So we were attracted by a number of reasons. But it wasn't Wivenhoe itself particularly. It was Colchester more than Wivenhoe at that stage, but things changed very rapidly once we got involved in Wivenhoe.
So this was 1972, and so I guess by then the town was still an industrial town, or certainly perhaps fishing and shipbuilding, although not obviously in its peak boom years, but there was some kind of industry down towards the bottom of the town.
Absolutely. So I can remember being at home so we lived in Sanford Close to start with, and there's still the rivet gun going off in Cook Shipyard, so we're still building ships in those days. This is before Dean Park was built. This is before Broadfields was built. This is before Cheney Road was built. So Wivenhoe was moving out of its sleepy is maybe not the right word to use, but I don't want to offend anyone who's truly a local here. But it was changing because of the university opening in 64. But it was I've got a memory of the mid 70s where the university students were kind of revolting, as it were. So the university has changed enormously over the years. But Wivenhoe was kind of only in the early days of this growth that we've now got familiar with and used to in a way. That the population has doubled in size since those early 1970s.
So this 72-73 period, from my own knowledge, with the university, that was what has been referred to as the troubles at the university, which now might seem a bit overactive, because you go past and you see those towers that are always there, and university life now is probably very much a means to an end. But some of the things that I've been reading, some of the pictures, they did seem quite troubled times. Now, did that play out at all in Wivenhoe?
Yes, I guess so. But because my life, and Bonnie's life too, we were both working in London, then we weren't terribly bothered by the university. It was more the arts club, which I didn't get involved in, but it was the arts club had a big reputation in those days. And what was going on at the university was much more what we'd read in the newspapers.
And the town itself, so in 1972, if you maybe drove down or walked down from the flag, going all the way down towards the quay, what's there now that wouldn't have been there?
Oh, it's the wings on either side of the quay which has been transformed. So Cook's Shipyard, which is for a long time was obviously derelict for those who've been here for some time, and it was a working shipyard, and the cranes were kind of part of the parcel of Cook's Shipyard, and the upstream yard was Meredith's timber yard in those days. So it was still piles of timber around before it became Wivenhoe Port. And so things have gradually evolved, I guess, in a fairly slow manner. One of the things I enjoy about remembering back to Wivenhoe in those, for me, early days of 72, 73, is there were still people who had the time of day, people who would enjoy being in their front garden, sort of standing by the garden gate, and would in a welcomer, and you get a good morning from them, and you could stop and have a chatter to them. And sadly, that doesn't really happen quite so much as it used to. But I think there's one of the differences between someone that's moved in relatively recently into Wivenhoe still continues to walk down a pavement, and I stop and say hello to everyone I go past. And once they've got used to Wivenhoe, they suddenly also start to respond. I think there's people change when they come to Wivenhoe, and it has a great effect on people.
Yeah, I think in my own experience, this idea of people being friendly or just being polite and saying hello to you, that does take place. Maybe it's just in certain pockets. My need or my cause to go outside is perhaps if I've got a spare half hour on the working day, I'll head down, buy some apples, buy a stamp. So I don't really explore too much. So I'm going along the same paths each time, the same routes, seeing the same people. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think people are very, very polite and do say hello. Maybe it's just the time of the day because that is not during the commuting hours. I've noticed maybe, yeah, from around kind of 7:30 or 9-ish, it can be quite frantic in the morning. People are running around trying to get mm-hmm. somewhere. And then Wivenhoe does hit this lull period during the morning, which I think is quite pleasant. So perhaps that is sort of still there from the early 70s. Was there any period, Peter, where you and your family then decided that Wivenhoe was going to be your permanent base for certainly the medium, perhaps the long term?
I think that happened to us fairly quickly in, I think, about 1974. My wife, who was very much involved with the Girl Guide movement then, was the Girl Guide grapevine worked very quickly that there was a guide leader who'd moved from Southend up here to Wivenhoe. And Liz Baines I think it was another lady as well at the time who quickly got hold of Bonnie and persuaded Bonnie to get involved with guides. I think Bonnie initially started off with venture guides and then moved on to running the second Wivenhoe Girl Guide Company for a long time. And it's kind of fun because the new division commissioner for this area, Lorraine Pemberton. I remember Lorraine as a junior guide in Bonnie's Girl Guide Company, and I won't give Lorraine's age away, but she's now quite an older mother, let's say. So Bonnie has grown up and seen her guides become mothers themselves, and that was the way we got into Wivenhoe, through the guiding side. And then in 1976. Bonnie had a word with me to say that the Scout and Guide Association needed a new chairman, and so in 1977 I ended up finding myself as the chairman of the Wivenhoe Scout and Guide Association, and that's a role I still have, and one which I'm very proud of and enjoy thoroughly, because doing something for the youngsters, and there's about 170 of them these days, has been a real journey and a successful journey as well. So there's about 40 adults that are involved in the Scout and Guide Association, and it's a tremendous family we've got there.
Yeah, it seems, Peter, that the whole scouting and guide movement has been very much a constant in your time in Wivenhoe. As a newcomer myself, people obviously do understand and appreciate that when you move somewhere new, you need to meet people straight away and make contacts and just make some friends, basically. And so was it through scouting that was your first main social route into Wivenhoe life?
Yes, I guess it was. It was, I think that's probably true to say. And I think it wasn't just scouting that I got involved in other things. I remember Betsy Grasby, that's a name from the past. Some people remember Betsy, who was a local borough councillor who lived at Timbers of the Cross. And I remember inviting Betsy Grasby to an AGM. She was mayor, I think, that year. And in consequence, I found myself on the Keep Wivenhoe Tidy committee, and I got invited onto the Carnival committee, and so one thing led to another. So, people know me well enough. There's lots of things I've been involved in, and all stemmed from the fact I took on this role of chairman of the Scout and Guide Association, really just supporting the scout and guiding movements through fundraising and through running the hall and managing the hall that we've got. But so, then it led to a doubling of the size of the hall a few years later. So
the current hall, people will know it's hidden away, I think, rather well. It's behind the town council offices. Has that always been the main base in which you've operated out of?
Yes, it's been the only base. So it was when I took over as chairman, it was a flat-roofed building. I inherited an idea from the previous chairman, Peter Spall. I think in our history, since 1964, there have only ever been three chairmen of the Scout and Guide Association. Peter Spall, who sadly passed on out of this world a year or so ago. Peter I inherited an idea from him that he'd like to see the hall increased in size. That was an idea that grew in my mind, encouraged by other people. And the original idea was to just put a 50% increase in the size of the hall. Carl Dowsier is another person that's been influential in my life, who's been a reasonably well-known figure from those days. He's still involved in scouting, said, well, if you're going to put an extension, why don't you make the hall double the size and let's put a pitch roof on the building? So we've grown from what was traditionally a scout and guide hut to a scout and guide hall, because we said let's make it a building that is going to be attractive to people more than just scouts and guides. So it's widely used now, and again, it's something I'm very proud of. So,
and do you still see around the town, I don't know, I'm just trying to do a few basic maths here, but other scouts or guides that you had when they were very, very young, perhaps in their sort of 30s, 35 years old now, and they still come and say hello to you? And you...
Well, I'm not in uniform, and I've always been a sort of backroom figure doing the admin, sharing meetings and that sort of thing. So it's the leaders who we've got. We've got 9 scout and guide units for covering rainbows, beavers, cubs, scouts, guides, etc. So they're the ones that have the contacts. So people do that with Bonnie. Bonnie knows. Bonnie's been a very familiar face amongst guiding for a long time. And indeed, she's grown up to the guiding movement. So this last year last 5 years being the county commissioner for Girl Guides. So she's had a very busy time celebrating the 100 years of guiding in northeast Essex, and I've been with her on many of those occasions, so I've got to know lots of people in the guiding movement as well as people in the scouting movement through my long involvement. But not so much the young people, it's more the leaders and the people who drive the movement.
And it's something, Peter, that I imagine, or it sounds to be very, very rewarding, because you wouldn't stay on in this role for such a long period of time, and also your predecessors. It does sound as though it's something which you're immensely proud of, and there has to be something there which keeps you involved.
Yes, hugely. And every now and again, a parent will turn around and you'd hear a parent say that scouting or guiding was so beneficial for my youngster. It gave them confidence when they're growing up at school. It gave them social skills. It taught them about things outside of school. Schools have become a little bit narrow, maybe, in some of the focus. They can do a bit, maybe, less in terms of some of the sporting things that maybe don't have so much time and opportunity or funding to do. And scouting produces gives opportunities to youngsters to exercise responsibility, Well, Jason, let me ask you. Let's you turn the tables on you and ask you a question. Were you ever in a cub or a scout, or did you miss out?
I was. I grew up in a rural village in Nottinghamshire, and I was a cub, but not a scout. And from my memories, you know, this was sort of late 70s, early 80s. But I personally very much enjoyed it. There wasn't anything else at all in the village. There wasn't any youth club facilities. And then I think my only reason why I didn't progress into scouts was because my family then moved into a nearby larger village where there was a youth club and sort of teenage years. But yeah, I can recall going out on hunts, picking up sticks, doing trails, weekend camps. And I don't know what I would have filled my time with if I wasn't doing that. So it is something, yeah, which I personally, I don't know how beneficial as a person it was to me, but I certainly wasn't doing things I shouldn't have been doing while I was being a cub.
Yeah, good. So you and I have got a bit of common experience. I was also a cub and never a scout as well. But I think it's just great to see youngsters doing things that wouldn't ordinarily get a chance to do. And I think it may not be life-changing necessarily, but I think all those skills, it does help. And there are certainly parents have said to me, without scouting, their youngster would not have been as confident. And certainly, in talking to one or two employers that I've got to know over the years in my life in Colchester, because I became a Rotarian in Colchester and got to see quite a number of business people and friends, a lot of them said, you know, anyone that sends them a CV that's got scouting or Duke of Edinburgh's award, that was something else I got involved in for a while, on their CV, those people would always be people that you can rely on. They're people that you can trust, people with integrity. Those are characteristics I think you can easily learn in the scouting movement or the guiding movement. And I think it gives youngsters an opportunity. But it's not the only thing for youngsters. Obviously, we're competing against football and lots of other things these days. But in the days when you and I were growing up, maybe I've been growing up a bit earlier than you were. And I don't remember there's much else for me to do other than cubs maybe, but so it was fun.